So how did you feel when you were initially approached by Stephen Gillis to participate in his documentary?
Well, initially, I wasn't one of the subjects of the documentary. Initially, it was going to be just Travis and Scotty. Stephen Gillis was going through the feeling outdages of the documentary to see where he wanted to go. And at that point, we were just following, I do believe, just Travis and Scotty. I think Natalie actually was one of the subjects as well. And you know, while I was training, I noticed the camera being followed around Travis all the time. I was actually quite amused and interested by this. And when Stephen Gillis came up to me and asked me if I wanted to be in this documentary and gave me the reason why he wanted to be in the documentary, I was actually quite flattered and quite intrigued. But seeing how much of my life story would come out when I started talking to Stephen Gillis about it. So I was all for it, actually, when Stephen asked me to participate.
Okay, there's several moments during the DVD when you're watching your segments and you're saying to yourself, why is Bill putting up with all of this? Why is he letting these people treat him the way that he is? What does he have inside of him that makes him want to continue on? Can you just tell us what that is?
I can't really explain what is driving me. I guess I had a no-quit attitude from the start because, you know, I was dealing with people, actually, that I respected. Like, for example, Scotty Maka, huge amount of respect for, and Travis, who I went into training because of Travis, because I was great friends with him. I had huge respect for him at the time, too. So I wanted to prove to them that I could do this, you know. I wanted to prove to Scotty that I could do this. I also wanted to initially, I wanted to be a friend to Travis, to turn to something went wrong, or if he had problems, that I could be there for him, and vice versa. So this was one of the major aspects of me just continuing on and continuing on, continuing on. Now, further down the line, you know, as the ribbon got, I wouldn't say worsened, but no, as it had increased, I didn't really have any intentions on quitting at all because, I don't know, it's just not my issue to quit because I wanted to prove myself that I was up to the task, and I'm glad I took a lot of beating, no doubt about it, you know, there was confidence. I woke up from a beatdown, and I really couldn't move for like about a week, and I did that because it hurt, so I shifted from side to side. But would I change it now? Not at all, not at all, not at least.
How have things changed since then? Are you still ribbed, or do you feel like you've been fully accepted as, you know, one of the boys?
I think I have been fully accepted as one of the boys now. There are times when, you know, I am ribbed, basically because I'm gay. But they know that if I'm going to be ribbed because I'm gay, I'm going to be firing it right back at them. So it becomes uncomfortable for them, and then I realized I've done my job.
Well, considering the fact that there aren't a lot of openly gay performers in professional wrestling, do you feel like that you're kind of like, you know, a trendsetter in a way, that you're kind of like, you know, blazing a path for people to be comfortable with their sexuality in the sport?
Not really. I mean, there is a bit of an
underground pro wrestling scene, gay pro wrestling scene, so I have found out. But there are, you know, there are plenty, well, I don't want to say plenty of others, but there are others who have done this before me, like the Pat Pattersons and the so-called, and supposedly, although it's not 100% confirmed, Chris Kanyon. And mm-hmm. so they've done it before me. I don't want to say that I'm trend-setting at all. I'm basically more comfortable. I'm just happy being myself and just having the opportunity being out there and performing and refereeing rather than being, you know, the gay guy being the referee. I just mainly want to be more of, you know, just the referee Bill Taylor rather than the gay referee Bill Taylor.
Okay, how difficult do you think it was just to go from a hardcore fan to a referee in the span of a year? Were you ready for the emotional and physical challenges?
No, I wasn't. As I've mentioned before, this is probably the most physically demanding thing that I have ever done in my life, physically and emotionally. Physically because, you know, I mean, if you watch this wrestling live, you can tell that, you know, I'm not exactly the most fittest guy in the world. I'm kind of chunky in a way. So, to go in and start doing, you know, 100 push-ups and 100, just going, doing drills across the ring for about an hour, it was ridiculously hard. My cardio was just out, you know, over the top. It was just gasping for breath almost like every hour that we were training. So, yeah, this is probably the most physically demanding thing that I've ever done in my life. Emotionally, it was a bit hard, not too much hard. I mean, I was trying to get accepted, but a lot of the wrestlers weren't accepting me, so I found that I was being, in most cases, just ignored. So there was a lot of wrestlers who I was friends with at the beginning who who helped me during the process of becoming a referee rather than a fan. So they were much helpful. But there were other wrestlers who just really made it hard for me, and they wanted to push me to see how far, you know, what was my limit, you know, how much could I take before I bucked down and quit the business. And I didn't. And they were quite impressed by that. And, you know, a couple of the wrestlers who were my biggest detractors in me getting into the company are now my biggest supporters, hard to believe.
If you don't mind sharing some of this with us, what were some of the ribs that they pulled on you? Just so someone that's not too familiar with the sport can kind of understand what people have to go through when they just get started.
Well, one of the persistent things that happened when I was training and, you know, setting up the ring and when the wrestlers came in is I was chopped mercilessly. And by chopping, I mean like wrestlers would just take their hands and just whack it across my chest. There were times when one evening when we were setting up, there were wrestlers lining up to chop me. I think there was like three or four wrestlers waiting to chop me, and I had to, you know, beg to stop it after like the third wrestler because we're just becoming too much. I can remember a time when one of the wrestlers wanted to have a chop battle with me. So that lasted, I don't know, maybe about two rounds before I backed off. But yeah, I mean, and plus, as demonstrated in this wrestling life, you know, there was an instant where a wrestler wanted to spar with me, a friendly sparring match at the training academy. So, I agreed to that, thinking that it was going to be just like friendly, whatever, just headlocks and what have you. But the two of them basically just gave me a workover, like they were dropping me, body slamming me, elbow off the top rope. They rode me like 6 feet in the air, had me crashing down on the mat. And then helping me and making the stop, they were joining in and continuing on this beatdown. But that was one of the hardest days I had to endure during training. But you know, I came back the very next day. I mean, I didn't sleep well for about a week, but still, I just came back right after that because it was. Wrestling, by this time, it was almost drilled into me that I just had to continue.
Okay, a lot of people in the indie scene have part-time jobs or full-time jobs that they do during the day, like Scotty Mack, the former, NWA Canada Heavyweight Champion and the head of ECCW, is a bartender, and he runs the company, and Travis is, going to school and doing this. On Facebook, it says that you work at a cremation place. What's that like?
Well, I mean, during all my life, I had basically taken on office type reception / customer service positions, and even during the training, that's what I was basically doing during the day. But yeah, this opportunity came around almost by accident, because I knew somebody who was working at a crematorium, and she's asked me, well, she said that there was a part-time opening for a cremator, opening up at that place. And at that time I was really desperate because the job that I had before, wasn't giving me enough hours. So I said, what the hell, I'll apply for this, you know, what worse could happen? They could say no. But yeah, I got the job, and I'm now hauling caskets around every day and cremating them and sweeping them out and putting them into urns. Yeah, this is quite a demanding job for me. Maybe by the second day I was about ready to quit, but again, just like in wrestling, you know, I had to prove myself that I could do this job, because my best friend, my friend who got me this job, is actually like the manager of the cremation place that I work at. So I really did have to prove to myself that I could do this job. And I've totally blossomed into this job. It's wonderful. It's so amazingly detailed work, and it's interesting. You come across situations that every day that you probably won't come across again in the rest of your life. It's mind-blowing what I go through, but it's awesome.
I've spoken to a lot of indie professional wrestlers over the years, and a few of them have told me, you know, when they're at their part-time job, all they can think about is getting back in the ring and, you know, doing their thing. What are you thinking about when you're at work at the crematorium?
You know what? As opposed to some other wrestlers, I don't think about wrestling 100% of my day. I used to, but you know, I'm what, 43, 40, I can't remember how old I am. I'm 43 years old. I usually just focus on the task that is being presented to me, at that time. Because cremation work is a tough job, and you know, if you're not fully focused 100%, then you're going to screw up. Now, the same thing could be put to wrestling if you're not 100% focused on the match and not letting your mind wander. if you're not focused, then you're likely to get hurt. Don't get me wrong. I am 100% into the match once I get into the ring, and actually once I get into the building, no matter if I'm tired, no matter if I'm hurting, because of whatever, if I'm having a tough job, tough day at the job, all of that just kind of disappears once I get into the building. So no, I'm not thinking about wrestling 100% of my day. It's almost gotten to the point where I am thinking of wrestling during certain parts, but not all the time.
Okay, a lot of people always ask this question when they talk to professional wrestlers. Why? Why do you do this? To you, what do you think is the mystique behind professional wrestling? What makes it so interesting to you?
Oh, man, that's such a hard question because I mean, it's always been in my blood. Professional wrestling has been. Like, I've been watching wrestling ever since I was 10 years old in Calgary, watching Calgary Stampede Wrestling. It's a two-part question because a lot of my gay friends think I'm into the wrestling because of the gay aspect of it. And again, a lot of the professional wrestlers that I come across, once they find out that I'm gay, they think I'm there because of the gay aspect of it. But, that's totally not the case at all.
What's the gay aspect, if you don't mind me asking?
Oh, you know, you're like, oh, of course, you know, like hot muscles guy, you know, oiled up in you know, spandex. What could be more gay about that, you know? and, you know, just grappling just right in front of me. Like, holy model, what the heck? Yeah, that is kind of hot. But anyway, the whole sport of professional wrestling from day one as a fan has always been, you know, the sport rather than the gay aspects of it. I think of pro wrestling as a sport, and I've always loved it, and I've always been interested in it. I've never had, you know, the opportunity to become a wrestler per se. So when that opportunity to become a pro wrestling referee came about, I decided to finally go for it. At the time, I was 40. I mean, I was probably crazy for doing it at that age, but I thought, you know, if I'm going to do this at all, I might as well just go for it right now. The situation seemed right. I was good friends with Scotty Mack. I was good friends with Travis, who was going into professional wrestling. I thought the opportunity just seemed right at the time.
Hey, what do you think you've learned about yourself over the past 3 years?
Man, it's almost not really. Well, I've learned a lot, actually. I mean, I've learned, like, my skin is a lot thicker. My skin is definitely a lot thicker now than it was, you know, 2 to 3 years ago when I started. The sport definitely weeds out, you know, the boys from the men. I feel that I've learned a lot about personal respect, standing up for myself. Professional wrestling, especially refereeing, you really do have to get in there and just don't back down. So that's one of the main rules of professional wrestling refereeing, is just stand your ground and don't back down. So I've almost, you know, taken that too hard. I think I'm a more mature professional. I don't want to say grounded. How can I say that? I think I'm a more. It's hard to explain how much I've changed, but I do believe that, you know, I'm more able to stand my ground more because of what I've learned, and I'm not as meek anymore. I find, like, I don't back down from certain situations. I'm ready to just dive in for whatever is thrown my way.
Okay, of all the people in This Wrestling Life, the documentary, you kind of gave Steven the most unique access, so to speak. Like, you know, there's a scene when you're in the bathtub, and just like there's other scenes when, you know, when you're watching the birds, like there's that kind of very intense, those very intense moments, and then those very like warm-hearted moments. Like, how difficult was that to really open up like that to Steven?
Well, the bathtub scene was not my idea. Steven really wanted me to push for that. I'm like, well, what? Oh, am I in the bathtub? Well, okay. Because, I mean, that is part of my daily routine. And Steven wanted to get that. And I'm like, oh, okay, sure. But, you know, I mean, as time went by and Steven was pointed at the camera at me, I began to open up more, and I'm really, I don't think I'm that much of a reserved guy. I mean, if the opportunity seems right, I'll just open up about everything. There's certain things in the document that I told Steven in the documentary that didn't make it to air, but yeah, I just basically opened up because I found it cathartic that I could just express myself in this way. It was like a diary, like an audiovisual diary that I could express my frustrations, my feelings, what was going right, what was going wrong. So I didn't really have anything to hide, and I didn't really gloss over anything that much. So I just found it, I really did find it cathartic to just open up about certain aspects of my life and just let everything hang out there and leave, you know, no stone unturned, so to speak.
Okay, for someone that wants to get involved in professional wrestling, and they can't, if let's just say someone like that came to you for advice, what would you tell them?
What would I tell somebody who wants to become a professional wrestler? Well, I mean, it just depends on, I mean, I could sum up somebody quite easily nowadays. If somebody came up to me that was me, like exactly a carbon copy of me, I would say, you're crazy, you know, go to like the nearest gay club you can find and party on there. But me being me, yeah, it just depends on what their mind, what their mental aspect is, what their physical aspect is. And I would just say, you know, go to a couple of training sessions, see how your body feels after one or two sessions, because there have been instances since I have been trained that I have seen people come to training sessions and just say, you know what, I can't do that after two sessions. And while there's been some students that have since started after I've graduated, and I've given them some advice, because they're now actually a referee before they become a wrestler, and I've noticed them blossom into an exceptional performer, not just inside the ring, but outside the ring, the professional mannerisms around the wrestlers, and just the camaraderie with the people in charge has been outstanding. And so, I just can't wait till this guy debuts in the ring, because he's got a lot to offer. And while I've seen some people in the past, I won't mention names, but some people that I've trained with somewhat falter in a lot of aspects. I believe this guy is basically very well-rounded and quite mature, and I think he'll go a long way, so I'm quite excited to see where he goes.
Well, how does that make you feel to, like, play a part in someone's development like that?
It feels awesome, actually, because I get to, you know, I teach him a lot. That I teach him stuff that I know. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that he'll have to learn by himself. But it's just an awesome feeling to give him advice when he falters, and just just be with him, just talk, just be to talk to when he needs advice, or if, or just give him the respect that that he needs and wants and earns, if he indeed earns it. just being there when he needs somebody to talk to, that's all that I could ask for. You know, that's perfect. That's just, it's almost like a full circle, essentially.
There you go. I noticed a couple of hours ago on Facebook that you said you were going to bury some people.
No, I'm not going to bury anybody, because because Daniel Bryan posted a video or blog on his journal that his new YouTube channel is going to be dedicated to just burying people, and I'm going to bury this person, and I'm going to bury that person. So that's just a takeoff on what he said. So I've got no access to grind, really. Everybody that has been,
everybody that I have come up contact with, I have no, you know, access to grind, or I really don't have anybody that I think in the professional wrestling business.
Anybody that doesn't like me, then fine, whatever, you know. But yeah, I've no crossing to bear at all.
Okay, after you got all settled in and, you know, the ribbing kind of slowed down and stuff, have you yourself participated in any ribbings?
actually, it's just very minor stuff, just some stuff, nothing too major, just, I can't really remember what I did, but yeah, I picked on a couple of people, here and there, but just like basically minor stuff, during ring setup or takedown, but nothing too major at all. I mean, I have learned the hard way, you know, that, oh, since I'm on one of the boys, I can rip somebody who has, you know, higher status than me, but that didn't work out too well, actually.
All right, is there anything else that you want to say about anything that you're working on, or the project, if anyone hasn't watched This Wrestling Life?
Not really. I mean, I still get people to this. Well, actually, now I'm getting more recognized across town. Aren't you That Wrestling Life? Yes, yes, I am. Can I have your autograph? No, you can't. people do recognize me on the street. And I think that's great. It's just like the casual person who doesn't watch wrestling, who got, you know, interested in the documentary and what it had to say. And I think that's great. So I love the documentary myself, you know, because it presents independent wrestling in a way that anybody can watch the movie and be entertained by, whether you're a wrestling fan, a diehard wrestling fan, whether you casually watch wrestling, or whether you don't watch wrestling at all. It actually has something for everyone, as they say. So I'm very happy that to be part of the documentary, and I'm thrilled the way it turned out. It's just an amazing, artifact of my life in the year and a half that Stephen went around filming me. It's pretty awesome, actually, to have this to watch again and again.